Everybody can grab a seat. We now have nine. I apologize again to our citizens of Dallas for the tardiness of our city council members, okay? No excuse. And thank you for the ones that are actually here, okay? Ms. Arnold represents the women of our council. We will begin with an invocation, and then I'll lead us in Pledge of Allegiance. We, this morning, are celebrating our First Amendment rights in the city of Dallas. And traditionally, we have an invocation from a faith-based leader. And this morning, Susan Turpin, who is the Assistant State Director for American Atheist and a member of the Fellowship of Free Thought, is here. And we appreciate her interest, and we want to make sure that everybody is represented throughout our city and throughout our area, regardless of their religious beliefs. Susan is a member of the Fellowship of Free Thought and Assistant State Director of American Atheist, has been involved with the secular community in Dallas since 2017. She also acts as the treasurer in the Texas Secular Caucus and enjoys the unique experiences Dallas has to offer. She believes in fair representation and has a lot to offer in regards to equal treatment for all. Thank you so much, Ms. Turpin, for being here. All rise for Ms. Turpin.
I apologize. I have to hop a little bit. I have a slightly busted ankle. Many thanks to the mayor and the members of the Dallas City Council for the opportunity to begin your meeting with some secular words of inspiration. As we gather here today to discuss matters of great importance for the great city of Dallas, I would like us to remember the words of Abby Willeroot. We meet to serve our community, to use our resources wisely and well, to represent all members of our community fairly, to make decisions that promote the common good. We recognize our responsibility to the past and the future and the rights and needs of both individuals and community. May we act wisely and well. Today, we hope that the members of the council will be guided by the goodness we know is in them and that they will make decisions based on the will and the need of the people they govern. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Turpin, for those inspiring words. I heard a lot of good pledging over here in this group, and we welcome some special guests this morning from Dallas Academy. And Mr. Mark Clayton is going to introduce them and congratulate some winners of an important contest. Mr. Clayton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good morning. Thank you guys so much for being here. I am very pleased to introduce Dallas Academy. Dallas Academy, for those of you who don't know, is a private school with students with learning differences. Every year, the junior class spends about 4 months, is that right, memorizing the Gettysburg Address. If you guys listen to us up here, we have a hard time memorizing what we want to say, too, so it's great. But every year, they recite the Gettysburg Address in front of their peers, their families, and judges. And so the three winners of this year's competitions, Reagan Smith, Hagen Kaczewski, yes, and Hunter Zasa, will come and present the Gettysburg Address. So thank you guys so much for being here, and thank you, Council. Come on up.
Thank you.
Fourscore and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth from this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation, so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war.
We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives so that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this.
But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate We cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggle here, have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract.
The world will little note, no long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
It is for us, the living, rather, to be here dedicated to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced.
It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us.
That from these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion.
That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, and that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom.
And that government of the people,
by the people,
for the people,
shall not perish from the earth.
You want to get the picture class up here?
Yeah, get the class.
What?
Do you want the class to be up here?
Can we do what?
Yeah.
Can we do what again? Yeah.
Would you guys like a daguerreotype or a tin type?
By the way, I think Mr. Clayton was the judge that picked all the students do this, and they picked the top three, and Mr. Clayton did that. So thank you for your participation, Mr. Clayton. It's one of the great assets that our city has in education. I'm making a little presentation this morning. As you may have read in Mr. Broadneck's TCB, an award was given to our city, and the ASQ, the Airport Service Quality Award, for 2018 were given to airports across the international world. DFW won in being the biggest airport size, and the next airport size, Dallas Love Field, won. And it is the world's leading passenger service and benchmarking program. This is in regards to the wonderful customer service we have, and it also received the top honor for the best concessions program design, which I think we all vote for. So we kind of received that award as well. So Mr. Diebner, where is he? Come on up, Mark. It is right to give praise and honor to people that perform. And I just want to say thank you for your leadership. Thank you, Mr. Broadnex, for what you've done. And I give this special recognition, whereas Dallas Love Field named for Lieutenant Moss Lee Love, the Army aviator who perished in 1913. And whereas the airport was officially dedicated as Dallas Municipal Airport in 1927 on the famous aviator's Charles Lindbergh's visit. This is a few things that probably Mr. Callahan knew, but no one else does, okay? And whereas today, Dallas Love Field operates 20 gates to serve approximately 40,000 passengers through three air carriers, Southwest, Delta, and Alaska. Whereas Dallas Love Field was recognized internationally for their customer experience and quality by winning the 2018 top honor from the ACINA Airport Service Quality for North American airports that service 15 to 25 million passengers. This honor is from the world's leading airport passenger service and benchmarking program across 37 key performance indicators. Whereas Dallas Love Field continues to evolve and is near completion on the second phase of the modernization program, which doubled the number of airport concessionaires while bringing in new ticketing, passengers, baggage claim, and new parking garage. Whereas Dallas Love Field also received the 2018 top honor for best concession program design in a medium-sized airport. And whereas the City of Dallas applauds the employees of the Department of Aviation who work hard to create an esteemed customer experience for the community and traveling public, therefore I, Michael S. Rawlings, Mayor of the City of Dallas, and on behalf of the Dallas City Council on March 20th, 2019, do hereby extend special recognition to Dallas Love Field Airport for its excellence in customer service and quality. Thank you, Mr. Diebner.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. Members of City Council, we brought a small group of employees from the Department of Aviation. We also want to point out that Love Field really is a community. We also have representatives from the TSA, Transportation Security Administration. Raise your hands. A big part of that customer experience, one of the benchmarking measures in the service quality awards is the screening time and the quality of screening. We also have members of, or the lieutenant from the Dallas Love Field Police Unit. Say hi, Lieutenant. And then Isaac McClellan, who is the chief of our aircraft rescue firefighting, and also the paramedic group. You may know that we are essentially the second busiest location for paramedic calls in the city, just based on our volume. So we have paramedics stationed at the airport now, almost full time during the day while we're busy. I do want to give a little special recognition, because this award really is about the employees. It's about the folks that are at the airport every day. I'm not there every day. I don't really clean the airport. I don't maintain the airport. These are the folks that really did all that work. So they are the ones that are deserving of this honor. We also couldn't bring everyone, so we did take a photo of the group of employees all involved in making sure the airport is a great quality customer experience. I want to point out Marissa Sanchez, who's our facilities manager. We also have Jim Sinama, who is our landside operations manager here as well. Sharon is with our concessions group. Robert Neville is the manager of that group. Couldn't come because he's grouchy and he doesn't like to come to City Hall. We also have assistant directors Shanice Hughes and Stephanie McHenry are here. who are really day to day. And then everyone that's involved, I can't get to everybody, but I can assure you I'm shaking everyone's hand and thanking them for all the hard work that they do. So we really appreciate the recognition. It's really about the employees, and we really, I'm certainly appreciative that all of their hard work is recognized by you as a body. So thank you very much.
Your thank Honor. You, Mr. Diebner. Thank you. Just one comment and from me, and that is to our TSA partners, thank you for all your employees that worked during that government shutdown. That was fabulous. Thank you. We don't say thank you enough. Mr. Kleinman, who is chair of our Mobility Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Mark. But more than anything, thank you to the employees. Our employees, as well as the employees of all the entities that operate out there at Love Field, that customer experience is the best. And I fly through a lot of airports. And actually, frequently, I'm surprised when I get to some other airports at how bad they are. It doesn't have to be that kind of an experience. And you guys not only prove that it can be a good experience, it can be a great experience. And that experience permeates throughout the system. So while we talked a lot about the people that work for the city or work for TSA or work for our police and our fire departments, there also are your vendors out there. And that attitude permeates everybody that works at airport. When I go there and I realize my picture's hanging on the wall in there, but when I go there, everybody says, please, thank you. We're glad you're here. Service is good everywhere. The experience is great, and that means a lot. And that keeps people flying to Love Field. It keeps people coming to Dallas. It keeps us vibrant and keeps our community happy. That is the community airport. DFW is the big international airport. But the one that the Dallas people use on a regular basis is Love Field. And very much appreciate all the hard work you do, and keep it up, and keep smiling, and keep being nice, and keep people moving through, and just thank you again for all the hard work.
Thank you. Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you very much. As vice chair of the Mobility Committee, I just want to echo much of what the chair just said. And, Mark, you're a great leader, number one, and you guys have built a great team out there. What's happened at Love has really been transformational. Having watched it as a kid and having flown through there many times, to see what's happened since the Wright Amendment is just, it's just unbelievable. You know, we've got so much new retail space, and as Mr. Kleinman said, the experience is fantastic. So kudos to all of you, and thank you for your hard work and dedication, because it's very meaningful for the city of Dallas. Thank you again. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins.
Again, you know, I think Lee Kleinman said it all. Mark, thank you, and for your staff. It's great, but I want to thank your staff to reach out to the corporate sponsors when we had a shutdown, and there were so many corporate sponsors came in to make sure the things was done, to make sure they brought lunch and did the things that, you know, it's unheard of, you know, that you see community and staff employees, you know, go out there and make phone calls and say, hey, these federal employees need help, whatever we can do. You had a great staff. You know, it's a family. You know, it's a family out there at Love Field. But, again, thank everyone from your employees, the concession. Y'all do a great job. Kudos to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins. Thank you for everybody, and congratulations on the award. Thank you. And one last recognition, Ms. Arnold.
Yes, thank you. Excuse me. Good morning to all. And as we stated earlier, congratulations to all of you who served. This month, we've been out for a little while, so we didn't get to do our due diligence with recognizing Women's History Month. So we're coming in on the end, but it does not speak to our heart as a city. So I wanted to make sure we did recognize that, and as a city servant leader, I think it is very fitting and appropriate for us to continue to stress the importance of the value and the role that women play here in this city, and particularly at City Hall. So I want to thank all of our female warriors in City Hall, and that work for the city, the rest of the city employees. I'm very sure that this is part of why we are shining at the airport. Am I right, ladies? Right. All right. So I'll throw that in there. But it's just the fact that we continue to create, and we should be committed to continuing to create an environment where women in this building can work, feel safe, feel comfortable in knowing that we are very committed to helping them in whichever path they decide to take. And that also is always a safe place where they can go. So with that being said, as a city, we need to continue to set the standard, but I want to recognize just some of the actions we've taken. And I know normally I get in trouble when I start calling names, but I do want to start off because in my tenure since 2015, I want to commend Mayor Mike Rawlins for his step to address the issue of domestic violence. I know that many times, you know, you can be abused, male or female, but the rate seems to be more dominant with females. So I appreciate so much the step that you've taken. I can't help but thank Mr. T.C. Broadnax because he's made several selections in staffing with strong women running the lead. Chief Hall, I definitely want to make sure that we commend him for that selection. Kim Talbert, also his right hand, left hand, and feet. but thank you because we do appreciate her leadership and her staffing. I can't help but also thanking Jennifer Staubach Gates because she took the assignment of domestic violence. You can just in working with her, I know it's not just the title that she took. It was a commitment, and I appreciate that so much, and it speaks volumes of our commitment, Mayor, and your selection. Miss Sandy Grayson, you have been a very good support. 16 years, we have to recognize you for your leadership for 16 years as a voice in your community. So I do want to thank you for you working with me and trying to help me as a councilwoman. But all in all, just through it all, the mayor, and I appreciate you giving me this time. We still have a ways to go in this city in terms of working and making sure there's an even playing field for everyone. And also want to mention, I've got Mr. Queso. He also has a number of lead women. And so for all the departments that I didn't mention, just know that it did not speak to my heart. Right now we're limited on time. But just make sure that today you give a woman a pat on the back, or shake her hand, or high five a women power sign. That's okay to do that. But thank you, Mayor, for letting me have that moment today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold. I was reminded that we didn't take a picture with all the airport employees. So if you guys would come up, we'll make our way up, and we'll have this big old picture, if that's all right. Everybody for the airport.
Thank you. whatever you need. Thank you, woman.
Ms. Johnson, we'll take our morning speakers.
Thank you and good morning. I will be calling the first five registered speakers this morning. And following the morning city council briefing, I will call the remaining speakers. We did have a cancellation on speakers, so your first five registered speakers will be Queen Janata Montgomery, Edward Okpah, Eddie Probst, Edward Sebesta, and Diane Benjamin. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the city council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the city council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are given 3 minutes to speak. You notice the time at the monitor in front of you. When your time is up, please stop. Address your comments to Mayor Rollins only. Also, if you have any handouts, please hand it to the officer to my right, as it will affect your speaking time. Your first speaker, Queen Janata Montgomery.
Good morning. I am a legal advocate. I am an advocate for people with disabilities and an advocate for the people who are underserved, and I'm also an advocate for the students. I had recently been summoned to speak on behalf of Such, and I am here to propose a long overdue oversight in our democracy concerning the students in the city of Dallas in Dallas County. The city needs to secure the voting rights to everyone, meaning the students. The students contribute financially in a great capacity with their tuition costs, jobs, beverages and food, housing, et cetera, due to the fact that there's billions of dollars of taxes that they pay. And students need the inconvenience to be able to vote on campus, and the majority don't have transportation to be able to go vote. So students with disabilities need the convenience of being on campus as well to be able to vote. And right now, the city is considered basically to be in violation to not ever think of the students to be able to vote and are actually missing out on additional votes that you could possibly have to serve on council or any elected position. I put in earlier in February for UNT Dallas, SMU, Paul Quinn, UT Southwestern, and UT Dallas. And, you know, this year they won't be able to vote on campus. So the city could have benefited from those extra votes, like I said. But by me helping to contribute to the UNT new polling locations in Denton leads the way, because they are providing permanent and early voting for the students. And TWU will also be able to do so, but we weren't able to get to them. But they will be able to have voting polls for them next year. And I think that's all for me. Yeah, that's it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Your next speaker, Edward Okpah.
Good morning, Edward Opa, Dallas resident since 1987, and I'm here to speak to the issue about the, you know, the always embarrassing situation of council members that are found to have been corrupt because somebody bribed them. You know, having lived in this city and having participated in all kinds of capacities, serving on boards and having traveled with mayor on trade missions, spoken about Dallas internationally, I get embarrassed when I'm called from friends all over the world, what's going on over there. So I think as a city, we owe our citizens, you know, some due diligence and some responsibility on our part. I know mayors who have ran and mayors and candidates who are running always said, we're going to have a stronger ethics. Fine. But what, how are you going to do it? In my own humble, you know, position, I think we need to seek a way to pass a resolution. And that resolution should ask any federal judge, in the case of anybody who has bribed an employed staff, an appointed staff, or elected staff, whatever that employee, whoever took the money, whatever number of years they're going to get in sentencing, the giver of that bribe needs to be given at the same amount of time. Since the time I've been in Dallas in 1990, when the first person, you know, from Paul Fielding down to the recent case, and then we've had people, DISD, we've had a state rep, who gave those people money. And oftentimes, what they have, they do a few months in federal prison, and they go away. And nobody remembers them. And but the person who took maybe a few thousand dollars, spent tens of, like down here, spent what, more than 10 years, or was given more than 10 years. I think we need to, as a city, if we need to put that in a resolution or for citizens to vote for it, and we have to be friends of the court, you know, during trial and ask that whoever is giving money to our elected officials or appointed ones, if they get 10 years, they too get 10 years. And I would like to see maybe a bulletin board in the city where we show pictures of people who have bribed our officials, and we can link them with whoever they bribe. So that becomes a permanent feature in our city, so that kids, when they grow, when they come here, they see the picture of who did it. So that's all I have to ask. I'm researching into this matter. I am writing more my Congress people. I am writing, you know, the Attorney General of the Federation and the Attorney General for the Northern District. We need to do this in order to cut the influences of people who come here to bribe our officials and get away with it. I think that's a fair thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Opka.
Eddie Probst.
I'm sorry.
How y'all doing? I'm a native of Dallas, Texas for 50-something years, 57 finna be. This is what I want to say. The things I see here, I've been fighting City Hall since 1998, since them New Yorkers been coming in here through the city getting profit out of South Dallas. And, Merle, you know who they are. And it ain't nothing but a setup game from the city. Y'all go over there, send those guys over there, kick us out of our own black businesses, our own territory. Like the city place got the Black Forest State on. How in the hell did Dwayne Crowley get that to him for $2.5 million? Now he own it, but he sees that from the city, sees that from us. And that's a culture spot. It shouldn't be a homeless place where you give these people pills and pop pills over in South Dallas all day and go crazy so y'all can make profit off of it, because that money do go to the city. Yo, we know where it's at. And we know who's who, especially when you want to open up these boarding homes and put them churches in this business, because it's a gateway for their profit to pocket y'all pocket in the city of Dallas. It's not for us in our community, but you bring it to my community. Y'all keep up the homicide. You're keeping up all the crime rate over there. And those people that are getting homicide and traumatized are the homeless people that ain't even from the city. They come from downtown Dallas. This is where it started from. They on this street. Y'all trying to move them over there. Y'all don't want them in North Dallas. And it look like a cartoon show over there. I hate to bring tourists through my neighborhood, you know, because of what y'all did. And it all backfired at the city. Like at the Farrell Park parking. We've stopped parking cars in our community since the city took control. Parking cars at Main Yard, parking car door train. Y'all get these people to come from other states and take control of this thing. And y'all making us look like fools in my backyard. In my backyard. Like, I do want to get that Black Forest State back. I do want that to be an entertainment spot, our culture. City Place shouldn't turn that into a hobo house, a 1960 hobo house, because that's what they're working on in my hood. That's all I want to say.
Thank you.
Edward Sebesta.
Good morning. I've distributed a report to you, which is the history of the Confederate War Memorial. One of the key features about a monument is what the monument was intended to do. Most of the discussions have been mostly about the Confederacy and its meeting. And also, a monument doesn't exist in isolation. Like a gear, you have to understand the machine to understand its purpose. A monument exists in a historical context. So I'm distributing this history. It's a preliminary, very rough cut. I want to make sure the monument does exit. I would like to bring your attention, though, to the chapter on Hatton W. Sumner's. there's a real risk that in terms of memorializing Alan Brooks that you'll really make a pretty bad mistake. And I think you need to understand who he was, who he is in history. I've been discussing it with some of the historians locally. On a different topic on Fair Park, Fair Park has an historical meaning. It's been written by Latino writers writing about Mexican-American history. And I think that we need to make sure the recontextualization committee doesn't commit the equivalent of Holocaust denial in terms of comprehending and understanding the 1936 centennial and the buildings for which make up that assemblage. Thank you.
Thank you.
Diane Benjamin.
Good morning, Mayor, my city council, and my city councilwoman, Jennifer. I want to wish everybody, this is Diane Benjamin, I want to wish everyone happy new beginnings with the spring forthcoming. My comments regarding the Citizens Police Review Board. The launch of a two-week series of town halls commencing on January 3rd regarding an expanded role for the Citizens Police Review Board has served to alert the general public and heighten public angst. The majority of attendees had never heard of an existence of a Dallas Citizens Police Review Board. Therefore, understandably, the representations and the presentations were merely superficial overviews lacking substantive information. Surveys collected afterwards were apparently being deemed as a referendum from the general public, considering that until today our views had not been presented publicly to the City of Dallas officials. Despite being informed of each town hall, that the general public would be given an opportunity to speak before the Public's Safety and the Criminal Justice Committee on February 11th, the chair denied requests for public testimony. Instead, the entire meeting was dedicated to the presentation by Chief Hall, representing the position of the Dallas Police Department management on the matter. Subsequently, the general public has discovered that advocates for the reconstructed CPRB have been granted ample opportunities before the Dallas Citizens Police Review Board. On February, in March, April, May, and December, we've heard from many of the presenters who were in favor of the Citizens Review Board, but we were not given an opportunity, those who were not in favor of the Citizens Police Review Board. Thousands of Dallas residents, taxpayers, voters are not participants, and we're supposed to be. This is the Citizens Police Review Board, and within either the Community Coalition or the Dallas Police Department. As such, they have been excluded from the planning stages, extending over a three-year time frame and approval process for empowering the CPRB. And until today, they have not been given an opportunity to voice their objections publicly in an official capacity. This brief, 2 to 3 minutes per individual, is inadequate for addressing concerns in depth. Therefore, a letter has recently been delivered to Dr. Brian Williams. I have copies of the letter here, and I'd like him to be distributed to our city council members and to our mayor. And Mrs. Joyce Coffey, who is on the CPRB, is requesting an opportunity to share concerns and viable solutions publicly with a formal presentation. In the interest of fairness and transparency, I ask the council to delay their vote on the CPRB reform pending public formal presentations to raise objections with facets and proposals to date and to offer acceptable solutions. Furthermore, I ask the members of the council to give serious consideration to the points. And here are the letters, and I would appreciate it if they would distribute them to our city council members. Thank you very much.
For the rest of the speakers, we're going to have a short morning session. We just have one short morning public session, then we go into executive session. So we'll take you up right after our, I say short, I don't know if it'll be short or not, but we only have one item. We'll do that then. Okay?
Thank you. This concludes your first five registered speakers. We'll now move to your voting agenda. Item one, approval of minutes of the February 6, 2019 City Council meeting. So moved.
Got a motion and a second. Any edits? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion's carried.
Agenda item 2 is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This morning we have individual and officer appointments. Nominees for individual appointments to the Automated Red Light Enforcement Commission, Tremont Houston, is being nominated by Mayor Pro Tem Thomas. To the Arts and Cultural Advisory Commission, Angela M. Foss is being nominated by Councilmember Kingston. Ms. Foss meets the Professional Design Expertise Special Qualification. To the Citizen Homelessness Commission, Brandon J. Vance is being nominated by Councilmember Arnold. Mr. Vance meets the General Public Special Qualification. To the Civil Service Board Adjunct Members, Curtis Pierre is being nominated by Councilmember Arnold, and Althea Ann Harrington is being nominated by Councilmember Narvaez. To the Municipal Library Board, Louis Giles is being nominated by Councilmember Griggs. Officer appointments, Jennifer Workman is being nominated Chair of the Building Inspection Advisory Examining and Appeals Board by Mayor Rawlings, and Kelly Webster is being nominated Chair of the Fire Code Advisory and Appeals Board by Mayor Rawlings.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Mr. Mayor, your briefing continued.
Thank you. We'll take briefing A. Mr. Broad next.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm going to ask Majid and his team to review and brief the council on the progress that they've made on our right-of-way management strategy and approach, and share with you some future steps to continue to enhance that via some of our codified measures going forward. So, Magic.
Good morning, Honorable Mayor and Council members. I'd like to introduce our Interim Director of Public Works, Robert Perez, and his team of Christine Turner, the Assistant Director of Public Works, and Ali Reza Hatifi is the Senior Program Manager with Public Works. They worked for several months on the right-of-way ordinance and updating that. We briefed the MSIS committee back in November, November 26, 2018, and also we briefed the City Council on January 2, 2019. We've received many comments, very valuable comments, and so we're bringing an update to you. Not just on the right-of-way activities, but also on alternative delivery methods and next steps. With that, I'll turn it to Robert.
Good morning. So on the first slide, we'll talk about the presentation overview, as Majid alluded. We'll talk about background and history, purpose of this briefing, the implemented actions, proposed actions, and our next steps. Just a quick reminder, the work in the right-of-way is governed by three main sources, to include Chapter 43 of the Dallas City Code, Pavement Cut and Repair Standards Manual, and the City of Dallas Traffic Barricade Manual. Over the past several months, City Council has raised several concerns, and on the next few slides, we'll talk about how we plan to address those. So what we've heard is that there's an increased requirement of oversight of construction in the right-of-way. We want to implement more stringent restoration requirements for streets that are in good condition, maintain accessible walkways and pedestrian detours during construction, accelerate traffic barricade removal upon completion or non-use of the traffic control material, evaluate and recommend revised city codes on steel plates. Those are noise concerns. Evaluate the noise ordinance and waiver process, enhance regulations to reduce utility damage, coordinate work with other city departments and partners. And those three items came specifically from the MSIS committee meeting on November 26. Enhance public notification of construction activities. I think Councilman Magoo brought this one up. And then also explore alternative delivery methods for public works projects. So to address these concerns, our staff and I reviewed the existing codes and ordinances that pertain to work within the right-of-way. We did present these recommendations to MSIS Committee on November 26th and then again on January 2nd to the full council. We also held a meeting with all of our right-of-way users and our partners on February 22nd. We filled up the auditorium downstairs, so we had a lot of good dialogue during that meeting. The purpose of this briefing is to present and discuss the actions that have been implemented and the proposed items that we want to bring forward for City Council consideration. Upon completion of this briefing, we hope to seek feedback from you as we finalize the processes and codes that we want to bring forward for council consideration and implement in the very near future. So for the increased oversight of construction in the right-of-way, over about a seven-month period since August 1st of 2018 and middle of March, the right-of-way group has issued 314 citations to right-of-way users. That has resulted in revenues of about $100,000. The citations have been issued for everything from working without a permit to improper traffic control. Through consolidation of public works staff and transportation group, we now have 13 staff members within the department that are issuing citations. What we want to do, in addition to what we have on the books right now, is we want to escalate, or want to look at the potential to escalate fines based upon repeat offenses. We'll review that and provide recommendations through the 2020 budget process. As far as the concern of more stringent repairs for our streets, for utility cuts or any other cuts within the pavement, we currently have an age-based methodology in which a street that is 5 years of age or younger has been resurfaced or reconstructed within the last 5 years. Contractors or whomever cut into the pavement are required to restore either a complete concrete panel, or they are required to do a slurry or micro seal of the entire block upon completion of their work. What we want to do is we want to move that to a PCI-based methodology. Basically, a 70 PCI, 70 and above, is a street in either good or fair condition. So we want to basically go to a PCI-based or condition-based methodology instead of an age-based. And for streets that have a PCI below 70, we want to move to a methodology in which we leave the area not just where the pavement cut, utility cut is, but also the area in which the contractor worked to ensure that the area is left in as good or better condition previous to the cuts. Maintaining accessible walkways or pedestrian detours during construction. Anytime that we have a right-of-way permit and traffic control permit come through our office, we look not only for vehicular detours, but also for pedestrian detours to ensure that there's an accessible walkway. We will continue looking at alternatives for scaffolding or ensuring that there's ADA accessible walkways during work. I have to give Councilman Kingston a little bit of credit on this photo he provided to us.
Mayor, and other photos as well, not just this one, several.
We picked the most recent one. So we presented this as a good example as far as, we keep hearing, why can't there be scaffolding, or why can't there be, something going through the work area? So that's a bobcat that's there. It's working. You can see that the building that they're working on next to it, they're basically renovating, gutting it, if you will. We don't want to mix pedestrians with that type of equipment. Even if there wasn't that equipment in there, I don't think we want to get to a point where we're mixing pedestrians with workers coming out with materials or any other equipment. Obviously, if they're not working and there's a viable walkway, what we can do, what we will do, is have them maybe push the fencing back against the building so that when there's not work going on, there's a walkway there. However, during the work, we will have to have an alternative pedestrian detour. I think at this one right here, which was on Greenville, I think that the detours were at the next block over. So we just kind of wanted to give a picture as far as what we're looking at as we approve these permits. The next concern, accelerate traffic barricade removal upon completion of a project. Essentially what we will end up doing is we will, if there's no work in play, we will have them remove it. Keep in mind that what we deal with a lot of times is you'll see a closure with no work or what appears to be no work going on, and a lot of times it's concrete that's curing. Concrete cures anywhere from 3 to 7 days. So, to try to plate that kind of work, you could damage the material that's there. But essentially, if we come to, if we get a concern or we see something where the traffic control is not needed, we will give the contractor 24 hours to remove it. Failure to remove it within the 24 hours will result in a citation. Evaluate and recommend revised codes on steel plates. This is a tricky one in that today, if somebody utilizes a steel plate, they are required to stabilize it, and that's primarily done through a cold mix. However, we want to make it a punishable offense that causes, if the steel plates cause any loud or disturbing noises or vibrations, that can result in a citation as well. Evaluate the noise ordinance and waiver process. So the existing process as is, it pertains to work at during buildings or work on buildings. We want to use the same hours and restrictions for work in the right-of-way. Of course, this is for non-emergency work. Obviously, if there's a water main break or, you know, something of that nature, the companies are going to work however late they have to in order to fix the, I guess, if there's a water leak or a gas leak, at which point they'll finish that emergency work, and then they'll come back and do the final restoration later. What I do want to make the council aware of is that many times we have to consider, do we disturb a business or do we disturb people, you know, sleeping in their homes? And moving forward, we intend to err more towards the side of the resident. So just, you know, keep that in mind. Enhance.
Mayor, if I may add to this one, we also deal with, especially in the downtown area and the core in the core area, the core business areas. There's streets or boulevards that are actually serve as access points from the freeway, and so commuter traffic is very important. So in instances like this, we're looking a lot more comprehensively into shortening the activities during that time, and Public Works is working with transportation to kind of coordinate the traffic signals so they allow more time for that traffic to go through a construction activity site.
Enhance regulations to reduce utility damages. Currently, everyone who's working in the right-of-way is required to have their right-of-way permit on site. What we would propose to do is, in addition to requiring the right-of-way permit to be on site, we would also have the 811 dig test information, which basically is a confirmation that they actually called in for the utility locates. So we want to ensure that was done, so we would require the right-of-way user to have that information on site as well. Coordinate work with other city departments and partners. So at our last IMP briefing, I think it was Councilman Magoo who asked for a consolidated map of all the IMP work, all of the bond work, all of the DW work. So the first step of this is the map that you see here is it's the IMP. It's the five-year plan that we have. We actually have a map working with our CIS partners as well as our own GIS groups. We have a map that now has all of the items that we just mentioned, DWU, bond, and all of our maintenance projects on one map. We anticipate that probably being live within the next month, but for right now, we have mapped all of our IMP projects, and they're there at that location. In addition to partnering, or what I like to say on partnering, is that we have biweekly meetings with many of our partners, to include Atmos. We have shared all of this information with them. Actually, this on Monday, we connected Atmos with our DW partners as they're both going to be doing work in an alley. Don't ask me the alley right now, but they're both working in about 7 months' time. So right now they're both in the planning stages, so we've connected them so that that way they can coordinate on that work. We in Public Works are also working with our partners in DWU. Anytime that we have overlap of maintenance projects, we try to coordinate so that way where DWU may have only been doing about 50 or 70% of a street or an alley, we kick in the rest of it so that way we can do a complete project. Most of the times we find that the prices that DWU has for their materials will pretty much pay for our project at our prices, since we have a greater economy of scale on our contracts. So we are partnering. But I say this mainly just to let you know that on a consistent basis, we're looking at what everybody is doing within the city of Dallas, and we're trying to connect the partners where we can, and we partner where we can as well. Enhanced public notification of construction. Currently, our books basically say that anytime somebody is doing work within the right-of-way, they're required to give a 48-hour notice to the adjacent residents or businesses. A lot of times we don't require we don't require notification if it's something simple as going out and marking locates, utility locates, or if you know, say that DW is going to go out and look at a water meter or something. So we're going to continue that process. Notification will be needed if the work is going to go beyond 24 hours for any non-excavation or lane closure. Notification will be necessary if the work involves any excavation or any lane closure. So we also want to look at that anytime right-of-way work includes work lasting or lane closure lasting more than 24 hours, two separate notifications will be required. Once again, this is for non-emergency work, but we typically have plans and we know when people are going to be out. So what we'll do is we'll probably do a 10-day and a 2-day notification just so that the neighborhood and adjacent businesses are aware of the work. And then any construction that's going to be on a thoroughfare, a major thoroughfare, arterial collector street, will require at least two message boards to alert the traveling public as well. The other concern that we have, or that we hope to address here in the very near future, is the idea of alternative project delivery methods. Currently, Public Works for all of our street work, for all of our street alleys and sidewalks, we currently use competitive bidding. But we also in the future want to look at competitive steel proposals, construction manager agent, construction manager at risk, and design build method. For the current bidding process that we use within Public Works, we historically have gone with a low bid. We do look at the financial viability as well as the capacity with the contractor, but typically these awards go to the lowest bidder. The competitive steel proposal, this is something that we want to look at in the very near future. This essentially is, it allows for other variables other than just low bid for a contractor to be selected. It allows us to look at experience with the city. It allows us to look at workmanship and things of that nature. However, the limit on this is that we can only keep it for projects that are valued at $1.5 million or less. The construction manager agent method, this allows us to select an agent. We go out for RFQ, select an agent that would actually manage multiple contracts within the city. The construction manager at risk method, this basically allows us, or would allow us, to select a contractor to come in during the design portion of a project. This allows for greater collaboration between the contractor and the designer, and it also sets a guaranteed maximum price for us. Design build method, this again allows for a contractor and designer to work together in a collaborative manner. We're limited to six civil works projects or public works projects per municipality per year. This is just kind of a matrix of what other cities are doing as far as these alternative delivery methods. And this is just specifically for public works projects. You can see that City of Dallas would just do competitive bidding, but the other cities have utilized other methods. And I do have to point out, too, that currently, the bond program for a couple facilities projects is doing design build, and DW and Parks also use alternative bidding methods. This is an example of how we would utilize the contractor scoring matrix. We are still working with the city attorney's office to refine and finalize that, but essentially it would be used as a weighted measure as part of selection, including the other items that we see there, so that we can get our best value utilizing the other alternative delivery methods. So as far as next steps, we want to finalize the codes and processes and change for future city council consideration. As I mentioned, work with the city attorney's office to finalize the scoring matrix. We want to utilize probably one or two of the alternative bidding methods and try to get one project at least for each of those going by the end of this year. Design build, we think we've kind of missed the boat in that most of our 2017 bond projects have already gone to design or will be awarded for design here within the next month. So we're probably looking at the competitive steel proposal and the contract, the manager at risk. And then also to Mayor Pro Tem Thomas, we're still working on that feedback tool, online feedback tool, as the public can come in and give their information at the end of a project. And that's it. We'll open to any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Magic, Robert, I want to thank you for this presentation. I'm on the Mobility Committee, and we received this presentation and a number of my colleagues that gave input and some points of concern, and you've addressed those, and maybe some others who have some of those concerns, but I don't. Robert, I want to tell you, you're doing a great job in this position. I hinted at Magic, you know, and joked with you earlier that interim, I hope to see it removed because you've done a very good job, and I feel you've earned this position. Very responsive. A number of concerns that I've had from constituents in my district. I've seen an email on Saturday, and you responded on a Saturday. And so I appreciate that. You're doing an excellent job. Miss Chris, what's the, how you pronounce your last name?
Turner Nowhere.
Okay. As you know, you got a round of applause from us. I carry that five-year infrastructure plan with me everywhere I go, along with our needs inventory list. And I just want to commend you since you're sitting at the table for that. I believe colleagues, all of us should have that spiral binder. Hopefully you're carrying it with you as well, because I know our constituents are asking us where we are on these different bond projects and when they'll be coming up. So I just wanted to take a minute to say thank you on that. And I appreciate you pointing out about that resident response. That's something that's critically important. Once the work is done, we want to make sure that these contractors are getting, you're getting feedback on these contractors and how well of a job they're doing beginning and end. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and I'm glad to see right-of-way management get to council finally. There's a little bit of drift here. I'm not quite sure what happened. Can we go to 21, please? This says that we're considering the bidder seal qualifications, so forth. I would say that our evaluation of those characteristics is imperfect, to say the least. DW has a project right now at Skillman and Live Oak where a contractor flipped over a backhoe. The driver of the backhoe then refused an on-site drug test and was terminated. The contractor's other employees then utilized a smaller backhoe and a chain to try to upend the flipped-over backhoe. The chain broke, sending links of steel chain flying at high speed. And that contractor is still performing that contract, which, by the way, is 3 months past due. So it's a little – I don't think that last bullet point on this page is true in any operational capacity. And so I am excited to see alternative methods of awarding these contracts, but I would like to see a really robust system of evaluating contractor skill and capability, and really holding past flaws against people. I am told that that contractor that has the contract at Skillman and Live Oak basically can only get public contracts because their private work has all dried up from poor performance. So let me ask this as a question. Will these improvements in our process apply to DWU projects as well?
Councilman, it's my expectation that it would apply to all construction departments.
Okay.
So that would include public works, transportation, DWU, and any other capital work that happens, whether it's horizontal or vertical.
That's great. And the increased enforcement of our right-of-way restrictions using the citations has been definitely helpful, especially downtown. So I'm excited to see that you all were able to do that. I'm not necessarily interested in utilizing that as a source of revenue, although the revenue number gives us an idea of the size of the problem. But the other thing it gives us is an idea of how fat and happy construction is right now with the incredible demand for construction. These companies can be leaned on to be more responsible because their profit margins are sky high right now. So I think it's appropriate to push and see how far we can get in terms of making them responsive to the needs of pedestrians and residents downtown. I can't tell you how many people downtown have read this presentation before this briefing and written in to say how much they appreciate the steel plate work that you're doing. I think everybody downtown has been awoken by a truck going across a steel plate at night, so that's hugely important. I really want to see the sort of accountability measures for the contractors that we've been talking about rolled out in a more robust way. And I understand you need more time to do that, and that's not ready today, but just keep me posted. I'm glad that you all are being responsive to that. And really, the four of you, I want to echo Mayor Pro Tem Thomas's words that you have been extremely responsive and very kind to come. I do send you a lot of pictures. So I appreciate that you all are paying attention to that, and this looks like a big step in the right direction. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Felder.
Yes, so not to be redundant, but I think that you guys are doing a great job with regard to the comprehensive presentation that you're presenting today. What I'd like to see is a breakout for District 7 of one of the problem areas. I think you guys know, I've said it many times, will be on Lamar Street. That is a very contentious construction project on Lamar. I hear it every week. So I would like to get a breakdown on and get an update on Lamar Street. That's the biggest issue that I have right now, because basically you have overlapping construction projects. You've got the SM Wright project overhead, and then you have Lamar Street going down. So people are very upset about that. And so if you could give me a breakdown on that particular project once again, and a breakdown on District 7 projects, I think I'd have to echo what Councilman Thomas said. You know, Robert, you're responsive. When I ask for things, you get back to me. I appreciate that. And Magic, you're running a great team. So thank you so much, but please get back to me on Lamar Street as soon as you can. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Arnold.
Thank you. Just quick question, and thank you again for your work. However, I don't know if I missed this. Is there a process that we have in place that helps us to locate equipment that's left behind by contractors? When I say, you know, the horses and the other signage.
If you have any issues with them, ma'am, just contact us. And
no, I'm asking, do we have a procedure in place
to
go out and locate? Do you all do any ride-throughs, drive-bys to see if there's equipment that's remaining from jobs?
Typically, at the closeout, ma'am, we will go look at that when a project's closed out or when work is closed out. We go, before we close the permit, we go make sure that everything's restored.
All right, so we need to work on that, because what I'm getting from, and I noticed myself, and I do have some pictures I haven't turned in, but and not to try to be on the photograph list of the year or anything, but I can tell you that there will be equipment that's tossed in the
on the side roads and the bushes and those types of things. So, you know, and oftentimes we just want them picked up because the job is completed. That's what I'm, that's really what I'm referring to. So if we're not doing it, we need to put a protocol in place so that we can handle that. And so since I know that we're not doing it on a regular, perhaps you can also think about instituting some concept where the constituents can report equipment that is in the alleys and places where we normally probably won't go. And I think it gets to the point sometimes when it sits there so long, individuals just take it home and make it a part of their furniture and decoration in the house. So if you would put those on your to-do list, I think that would really help us.
311 is probably the best way
for them to report that. All right, so are we communicating that to them? I don't know that the constituents realize that they can report a contractor's equipment that's in the bushes and they need to pick them up.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So let's try to tighten up on that on communication, and I know that I will definitely add that to our to-do list in District 4. But I think if we continue to see contractors who leave equipment behind like this, I think we need to also use that in terms of criteria is not to use them. I don't know if I can say this legally, but not to use them again. Okay, I'm just since I'm not a lawyer today. Thank you.
Ma'am, if I may mention just to add to that one, we do have 13 individuals who are responsible for the right-of-way, and they rover around the entire city. One thing that I heard our city manager stress is we have 13,000 employees, which means we have 26,000 eyes, and all departments are really responsible to monitor the right-of-way as well. So it's our expectation of ourselves as well as the other departments as they're conducting their business to do this. And we can work on an announcement on the 311 for our citizens to be able to report this and for us to have an SLA to respond immediately to those.
Ms. Arnold, is your mic on?
The stop sign, is that a considered contracting job or does the city
hit it? Hit it now, Mark.
Okay.
We do.
The reason I'm asking is because, so I do understand that, and I appreciate the city manager's commitment, and you are absolutely correct. We need to work on educating our constituents because we're seeing a number of our signs in our neighborhoods falling to the left, falling to the right, stop signs, you know, those types of things that could be detrimental to a car or to a passenger or just a pedestrian. So I wanted to underscore that because I'm seeing it more and more. So evidently we're not going down deep enough in the ground so that those signs are able to maintain, sustain the wind or whatever may be causing it to turn. So thank you so very much for that and appreciate your work, Mr. Magic. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Magid, I've seen a turnaround there. And Robert, thank you for your work. I think we have a better cohesive team. I'm still concerned, though, with the accountability equation and the quality control measure. I want to make sure that as these contractors continue to get contracts with the city that their performance standards are high. And if they're not, then I want those jettisoned from the process so they don't be they're not repeat offenders of the process. But we spend a huge amount of money in this city, you know, going floating bonds and spending the money and the interest rates that we pay and all the ancillary charges that go along with that. And to not get quality work is just inexcusable. And I also really appreciate the work that's finally being done after 6 years over on Cesar Chavez. You know, I went by there again this morning, and they're just – potentially, by the time that I leave office, we may have a concrete surface there. It's only been at least 6 or 7 years, I think, that we've been working on that. That perfect storm, extenuating circumstances. You wouldn't believe what's happened. We get that a lot, but I do want to make sure that it's done quickly for a good amount of money, a fair price, but also make sure that we hold these people to the fire. I've got new streets that are just, they're not doing well. You know, seems like a year or two after they're constructed, we're getting all sinkholes and our cave-ins, and that tells me we're either not using big enough rebar, not close enough together, the cement quality is not good, or there's not enough gravel, not enough sand, something, or maybe it's too wet, or maybe it's not wet enough. I don't know. But whatever it is, we've got challenges there, and it just takes an act of Congress to get somebody back out to repair a job after the fact. And they say, well, you know, we warrant this for a year or whatever. Well, we're not holding our feet to the fire on these warranties. I think we've just got to do a better job. And on 21, I mean, I looked all through the briefing. I don't really see any accentuation on quality, quality, quality. Can't pound that enough, TC. Quality, quality, quality. We've got to have quality work. And I just don't see any parameters there. So if it's there, show it to me because I don't see it. And that, you know, accountability is a great word to throw around, but quality control is the magic word, QC. Thank you.
Ms. McGew.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good presentation, good comments by the colleagues. I appreciate the mapping and pulling this together where we can see it and hopefully get more efficient in even how we address these things in certain orders. I appreciate that. One comment I'd make as it relates to the steel plates, I saw that component there. In our areas outside of downtown, it's not so much the noise, but it's the 2 and 3 inch lip that goes around these things that I'm getting a ton of complaints and actually been on the phone with people asking if I was in a car accident when I hit one of these things. So finding some way where we can help work with our contractors to make sure that when we're putting these plates out there, obviously they have to be there, but grading these lips where we're not running into a curb when we drive through our streets on that, I think is a key point as well. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Gould. That's a great comment. Do we go by and inspect when they do construction work, especially on streets with a steel plates and in place? I know they generally put asphalt around it. And when they do not do that, is a contract liable? Is there a quarter control? So I have been a whole lot of residents have came to me. You know, I think I did a 311 call in a couple of times about those steel plates. So how do we address that? How do you monitor those steel plates?
So we do have, it depends on the work. Magic mentioned we have 13 right-of-way inspectors to kind of regulate everybody else, Atmos, Encore, whomever. We have a team of probably about 11 inspectors that work on our resurfacing projects. So they're checking those at, you know, pretty much at the tail end of when that work's being done or when the plate's put down. So yes, we do monitor it. We're probably more on top of those for the fact that we don't have, I think we probably have about 40 projects, resurfacing projects going on at any time. So we monitor those pretty closely.
So we monitor those pretty closely. So if a resident called 311 and say, I got a steel plate and I got a safety issue, what is the turnaround time?
We're probably on it the same day that it comes in.
Okay. Well, I have about 3 or 4 311 requests.
Okay.
It was over 48 hours before they came back out to look at it. But they did correct the problem, but it did take almost 48 hours.
Okay.
It was in the alley, one of the steel plates in the alley. Another thing with right-of-way, when we saw cut some the middle lane of a three-lane street, the middle lane of a street, and we generally put the red cones, you know, on the right, on one of the left. When a street go into those lanes, when they pour concrete, there is not adequate barricades. We did have a couple calls that went straight into concrete on Wheaton Road. And I went back and drove by there. The barricade is with this cone here. But it should be a some kind of barrier of steel rail that when you do go out too far, you would not go across. So what is the safety guidelines of barricades when you saw cut the street that you know you had different traffic going into the street? Is the cone is not just another, it should be another safety issue a warning that we would not have. We had three cars that went into the concrete. Imagine you're about to say something.
Councilman, this is a little bit of a kind of a long treatment issue, especially when we deal with concrete street. Typically, if a trench is open for a while, cones would be a supplement to something else. And what typically construction activities happen is you actually ramp the opening or the hole that is created because if a motorist runs over it, that at least they would hit a ramp, they wouldn't hit a drop, and then they would hit another ramp going up again, and that's to kind of reduce the impact to this one. I've seen it anywhere from putting actually jersey ramps to all the way to doing barricades types A and B. That's something that we can definitely take a more in-depth look to make sure that those areas are fully secured.
And I think that I do understand, you know, when you saw cut in the hole there, but also very concerned when you saw cut and the concrete is poured and the concrete is still wet. And there should be some kind of adequate hazard sign. You know, I know we do on a lane, it might be a whole block, and you might, every 100 feet, you might saw cut that. But you do have street going to make a right or left turn. And sometimes those barricades are too far apart, and you don't have anything to disrupt them from going there. And that have been the issue. So I have drove down Wheatland and also Camp Wilson, and I see that very often, but I have noticed three cars had to be pulled out in the concrete. So I know it may be an accident prone, but we need to do something to stop that. So when you hear one car is fine, but you see three cars on the same street, and you go by, there is no structure to stop them from going, you know, because the cone is too far apart, and there is wet concrete.
So I hope that your concern can be addressed by our proposed electronic message boards that will be on the Collector Artillery streets. As we mentioned, that's one of our proposed changes.
Right. And another thing, you know, Robert, I talked to you and trying to get clarification is that sometimes you said we do not put the electronic board, and sometimes we do not put the flashing lights. So can you tell me why or when do we use flashing lights or when do we use the electronic board doing repair on the right of way, especially in streets? Because we have many residents have called us to that concern. They say, sometimes we got a flashing light, sometimes we got a warning, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we have a sign, and sometimes we don't.
So typically, whenever you have a street that's going to have like more than two lanes trying to converge into one, that's typically where we'll have an arrow board, because it's not just, it's just, you know, a smooth transition to that closure. You're trying to move, like, you know, two lanes into one. That's pretty much what we'll probably have something, because it's more than just one lane that's being diverted or moved over to the next lane. The proposed, I guess what we're proposing right now, is that anytime we have work on those big streets, we're going to have the electronic message boards out there to alert drivers of the coming closures.
Okay, so I will give you one street. I know we're still working on, we might have completed, is between 35 and Polk on Wheatland Road, and also on Camp Wilson, on Wheatland on 67 towards Westmoreland, I believe. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you for the briefing. The question I had, and I've got a lot, and I know I'm kind of wearing you guys out on emails related to the Atmos projects that are going on in my district and in the right of way. But there's not anything specific you mentioned regarding when it's somebody else doing the work. I know you talk about post-construction you know, evaluations on, I think you're referring to projects in our, that we have contracted out. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
So what I'm concerned about is the post-construction evaluation when other utility works are done in our district to make sure that they're put back in the manner that they were found it or potentially better if they're replacing things. I don't know if we're doing a follow-up on related to that to make sure that's occurring and that we're not getting taken advantage of by utility work done by other companies in our right of way. Especially, so when they use third-party contractors, do they have to be, I know they're pulling a permit, but what do we do to verify that those contracts are licensed or that they're, I mean, they're not permitted through us, is that correct? Or would they be?
The third party, no.
They're not?
No, ma'am.
So they're we're not doing any evaluation on them working in our city, is that?
Councilmember, all the contractors, they need to be registered with the City of Dallas when they pull the permit. If they're not registered with the City of Dallas, they're not going to get any permit.
So they just have to be registered. But what do we do to make sure that those that we have registered are quality contractors?
Well, as a part of registration, they need to have a bond, an insurance bond, and some other criteria to be able to be registered with the City of Dallas.
Okay. But we don't do any type – do we keep track of any type of work that they do or complaints that they have? I mean, we talk about, you know, evaluating our own contractors and making – and then maybe not bidding – letting them bid on things. But do we ever not allow somebody to be registered if we're concerned about their work product?
Well, not as of now because they are getting registered through private development, through sustainable development department, not public works. But we were thinking maybe, you know, the citation, when we issue citation multiple times to a contractor.
Right, but not letting them register in our city. Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, my concern is, and we want to be able to enable all the replacement of these lines, particularly like with Atmos or the work that needs to be done. But they're bringing in contractors from all over because there's just not enough contractors to do all the work that they need to be doing, and they're accelerated the replacement plan. So I want to make – so I just have hesitancy that we're not bringing – they're not utilizing, you know, contractors that are familiar with the area that are doing quality work. And then that ended up impacting us financially because they're cutting in our right-of-ways and you know, and then deteriorating our alleys and our streets at a greater rate than they would be if the work wasn't being done. So we got to assure that it's put back and replaced efficiently. So that is really my primary concern, but I want to thank you for the coordinated efforts that you're talking about partnering ourselves when we're trying to figure out where, when we're doing utility work or public works. I don't think we do enough of that. And then I do like that you're looking at, for our own work, that we're looking at some alternative selection options. I'm supportive of that, so I think that'll improve, as other council members said, the quality of work that's done. And barriers, several council members have mentioned that. You know, I sent you guys a photo over the weekend, or I think it was late last week, where barriers were not sufficient on it. And it was a city project. I mean, they could have just driven into the hole and caused a lot of damage. And especially on these residential streets that are not well lit. If there's no reflective mechanism and someone's driving down the street at night. We need to do more monitoring of that. I think I got everything covered. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you for this wonderful presentation. I support all these changes and just wanted to go first to page 28, please. On next steps, when do you think you'll be able to get this fully implemented? All the steps. Is it the May 2019 date for everything? Are there different timelines on these different items?
So for all the codes, we basically have everything. I've worked with our city attorney's office to have everything written up. We can probably bring it to council within the next month or two.
So the next 60 days on the first one with the codes.
Correct.
And then the scoring matrix, is it finalized? Or are you finalizing it? How close are we?
We're finalizing it right now. We will probably, if I were to, you know, take an estimated guess, probably the next 60 days as well. We need that in order to start exploring the alternative bidding methods. I do want to have at least one project, as I mentioned, underway utilizing the competitive sealed bid or proposal and the manager at risk. So probably, I mean, we have to finalize that the scoring matrix in order to get those underway. So I would probably guess within the next 60 days or so we'll probably have that done.
Great. So the second one is also 60 days. Then the third one, you're going to come back to the committee. When you come back to the committee in May of 2019, do you see that being conditioned to get approved?
Councilman, if I may, I think there was some very valuable comments on several items, including the use of barricades, the use of flashers and dynamic message signs. Ms. Gates mentioned the issue with the outside private contractors and their relationship with a permit holder such as Atmos or other companies. I think I want staff to do a really, really comprehensive job in bringing back those as well. So I would ask that we probably bring everything back to the City Council for consideration maybe no later than July 1st.
And okay. The last bullet is specifically for the feedback from the public.
Correct.
Yes.
So the last bullet on just feedback from the public.
Correct.
Mechanism. So that will come back, and you think you can have an online system up and running by May 2019 when you bring it back, or is that just bring it back for further discussion on the direction you're
going to
go?
Probably discussion to tell you where we're going so that you can see it. Okay. That's what we plan on doing.
So we've got 60 days on the first one, 60 days on the second one, the other one coming back in around 60 days
about
for further
days.
Discussion.
Right.
And then the other points, Majid said you're going to bring back in 60 days for further discussion.
Right.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Kleinman, you're the chair of the Mobility Committee, so yeah. Well, give us some thoughts.
Yeah, I want to thank Majid and Robert, Chris and Ollie all for working on this. It is really important that we actively manage our right-of-way in ways that really benefit our citizens. We have so many different entities, including ourselves, that do work in the right-of-way, but we have to keep in mind clearly, and you guys recognize that we have to not only keep traffic flowing, but also have to really respect the right-of-way for the citizens, the pedestrians, and the bikes. And I think some of this broader right-of-way management kind of came from impetus over concerns of pedestrian right-of-way. And I don't want to lose some of that emphasis. In downtown especially, we have a lot of construction going on, and that's where we have a lot of pedestrian areas that are being blocked. Ironically, a huge pedestrian plaza is being built in downtown, and they're doing more to block the sidewalks around that plaza to try to build that plaza. I mean, it's kind of an ironic situation. But nevertheless, please keep staying on that. And Mr. Perez, I very much appreciate that you actually added into the 311 app, so if people want to know, a specific item for blocking the pedestrian right-of-way. So as pedestrians see those issues or can't get down our sidewalks, they can report that, and that way we can investigate and make sure it happens. I do have a question about the RFP or other processes. Do we give additional credit or points in an RFP process or other procurement process for the time frame that the vendor says they can do the work within?
That would actually be one of the measures as far as the proposal. It's not just the cost, but also the proposed schedule
that they would present.
What
you're proposing, but
yes,
it hasn't
sir.
Been to point. I think that's really important because a lot of times what we see, and we're seeing a terrible example of it on Preston Road between Walnut and Royal, which is this sequential work. So they're putting in a new water main, and they're literally digging section by section by section. So the road just gets closed, you know, about all the way down. There's no reason they couldn't start at both ends and work to the middle or something like that. It doesn't always have to be done like section by section. So I think that one's killing my district and your district. I mean, I'm getting calls all the time, and Terry's not here, but damn. Get it done, you know. It's also causing a huge amount of traffic on the Dallas North Toll Road, which is the other alternate route to through there. So, you know, that's a specific example, but it's a great example where they're taking a very slow sequential approach to about a mile and a half or 2 miles of pipeline that very easily could be done two or three components simultaneously, in my non-engineering opinion. So I'm glad that y'all are going to now include in the scoring process an estimate of the time and possibly penalties if they don't reach that. And I realize, well, I asked about this years ago, and maybe it's still true, but I recall something that if you want to impose penalties for late delivery, you have to allow for bonuses for early delivery. Is that still the case?
The design build, and I've implemented that in other places. The design build, as well as the construction manager at risk, allows the city to do such a thing where you actually can share the savings with a contractor if they finish the project ahead of time and under budget. And so, that's so something that we could definitely put in the contract.
I don't think that's such a bad idea. I realize
it's a great idea.
It may make the project a bit more costly, but if it delivers it sooner, the benefit of the city.
Well, the contractor is going to be a true owner to the project, and he or she is going to be working really hard to ensure savings to the city. So I think it's a great idea to share some of the savings with them.
So, again, thank you very much for moving forward on this and taking a broader view on it and considering the impact to our citizens when we or others do this kind of work in the right-of-way.
Thank you, Ms. Gates.
Thank you. I have one question I want to clarify because the way Magic phrased it was a little different. So if Atmos has the permit with us, or they're authorized with us to operate, are there individual, if they have different contractors, are all those different contractors still permitted with us? They are. Is that correct? Okay, so they can't just under the umbrella of Atmos, those individual contractors that they hire also are required to be registered with us. Is that right? Okay, just want to make sure that's clear.
Thank you, and thank you for the presentation. I think it's important to note that things are happening in Dallas, not only economic development downtown, but our bond money is going to work for our streets and roads, and so we've got to do this right for citizens, but we're in a place where things are changing for the better long-term for the city. Thank you for your leadership. I heard two things today that are important. You don't need to take a pen. Thank you, Majid, for acting like you are. But one, thank you. One is you had several council members thank you for getting back to them immediately. That's customer service, Mr. Broadnex. Thank you so much. Hopefully that's the rest of the way that all city staff will be in being responsive. And second is quality. Quality, quality, quality. We should do everything in first rate in this town. And if people can't live up to that first rate standard, they shouldn't be part of our team. That's my belief. Thank you very much. We'll take our afternoon speakers or late morning speakers. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll continue with our open microphone speakers. I'll recite the speaker guidelines quickly. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council, shall be removed from the room. Individuals will be given 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time at the monitor in front of you. When your time is up, please stop. Address your comments to Mayor Rawlings only. Also, if you have any handouts, go ahead and hand it to the officer to my right, as it will affect your speaking time. Susan Fountain? Not present. Jesus Pena?
Good morning, Mayor, City Council members. Thank you for your time. I'm very proud of our city. I think you guys do a great job, and I'm very happy to be here speaking with you. I want to start off saying that I'm a very great advocate and supporter of the Dallas Police Department. I think we have one of the best departments in the U.S. And if somebody were to say what I'm about to say to you, I would defend the police department highly, but I'm very shocked at what I'm about to say. I do believe that we have and that you should know that there is gangster-like activity taking place within an isolated portion of our police department. My daughter was a victim of this the other day. A former police officer was making advances at her job. She refused his advances. While she was at a bar, he went there, and he made advances at her again. She again refused them, and he told the bartender, "I'm going to take care of her in 20 minutes." He made a phone call, and within 20 minutes, four members of the Dallas Police Department gang unit showed up, pulled my daughter, was her and her friend, got out of the parking lot, pulled them over, gave them no reason to pull them over, knew their names as they told them to get out of the car. They approached them with guns drawn and arrested my daughter, even though she had no charges against her of any kind. She was told that she was going to be arrested, and she was punched in the chest and handcuffed. She was charged with assaulting a peace officer and a judge that requires a 5-year felony sentence automatically. She never touched the police officer. She begged me. She said, "Dad, we need to get the cameras because it will show I did nothing to that man. These guys are friends of the manager, and they came to teach me a lesson." Mm-hmm. And they told her that she was going to pay. And I am begging for assistance. I realized something great that we have in the city of Dallas that's missing right now. There is no place to call to get advice or help for this kind of situation. The only advice I received, including when I called the mayor's office, talk to internal affairs. Well, honestly, if a police officer who's retired can call other police officers and have them do dirty deeds, I don't want to talk to anybody in internal affairs. And I'm very afraid for my daughter. We have no money for an attorney, and I'm seeking two things. I'm seeking for a way to find her to get some legal assistance, but more than that, I'm looking for a way to find a way to protect the people of Dallas. We need to have some kind of system in place or a group of people in place that if you feel you are really being done wrong by the police department like this, that we can go to. And I want to say this. I believe it's an isolated group of people. I believe that most of the police officers in our force are great people, just like you guys. They want to help people, but we need something done now. This cannot go on any further, and I beg that each and one of you get my phone number. It's on the list of my name, and call me if you have any advice that you can give me or tell me where to turn just to get some assistance. I pray that my words don't fall on deaf ears today, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. We've got your number, so we'll reach out.
Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, he's my constituent. I don't know him personally, but that greatly disturbs me, and I expect our police to stand up to a much higher bar of responsibility than that. And I hope that we'll go top to bottom with internal affairs or anything that we need to do to make sure that this is not repeated. And, sir, I'm apologetic that anything would happen like that if that's true. So, please, police department, let's pull this together, and we've just got to do it a little bit better job.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Please call me.
Rhonda Davis, not present. Dolores Phillips.
You do have handouts. Dolores Phillips' address is going to be P.O. Box 530236, Grand Prairie, Texas, 75053. I read in Dallas Morning News that you, Mayor Rawlings, instructed Manager Broadnax to investigate all the connections of Councilmember Davis and Caraway. I went March the 18th, 2019, Monday, asked for a dual investigation of the FBI and the United States Department of Justice to investigate the premeditated arrest of Green Oaks, the official oppression. I'm asking them to retrieve the 2 hours of unlawfully redacted video of that arrest. I'm asking them to watch the 2 hours that was unlawfully redacted to show that it was premeditated. I'm also asking to investigate the collusion into open to expose all the connections where you were able to this very day to infiltrate Dallas public libraries, to erase documents off of flash drives while I use the public library, how you sabotage my education, DCCC, Mountain View College, Blackboard, while you detached assignments from Blackboard, not only at Mountain View College Blackboard, but also UNT Dallas 2012 and 2013. When I went to DPD October 25th, 2013, many don't know that you prearranged that meeting 2 to 3 weeks prior. Corporal Cotner said that he spoke to you prior to me getting there that same morning. Why did you have to speak to Corporal Cotner when you arranged the meeting 2 to 3 weeks prior? Why did you have to unlawfully redact 2 hours of video from the meeting before you released only 20 minutes of the meeting that was held on the first floor in the lobby for all to see? Why would you fabricate a police report to say that I used hands and feet when it was never an argument nor any kind of disorderly conduct? Why would you say that I voluntarily went to Green Oaks when that is a lie? Why did you not put on the police report that you were taking me out of retaliation or to force me by official oppression to open because I'm not voluntarily doing so? Why would you state on, why wouldn't you state all the facts that ADAPT came? You took that off the video as to say if you ADAPT, you won't go to Green Oaks. Why wouldn't you state that I drove to DPD, parked in front, and my truck stayed there over the weekend while you kept me at Green Oaks for retaliation? Why did you not put that I drove to DPD with a 3.0 GPA? 6 weeks, less than 6 weeks later, I graduated with that same 3.0. Why don't you put that Timberland, which is now closed, manufactured doctor statements, which are not true, Timberland that is closed? What I want to say, in the document that you received, page is a NXIVM document. They're in court now, females acting like slaves and slave masters, which you unleash to battle me. And I ask them to investigate. Thank you.
Susan Fountain.
My name is Susan Fountain. I live in Council District 10. Last year, in the entire year of 2018, there were 600 complaints against the Dallas Police Department. Of these 600 complaints, only 200 were referred to the Internal Affairs Department. And of these 200, only 18 were referred to the Citizens Police Review Board. I don't think that we need to devote $1.5 million to fund the further investigation of our police officers. They are handicapped enough as it is to fulfill their duties, and I humbly ask that you do not grant further expansion of the Citizens Police Review Board at the time that you will eventually vote on the subject. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
B.M. Randolph, not present. Minnie Caruth.
Mayor Rollins, Council Persons, my name is Minnie Arnold Caruth, and I want to thank you for this time to share with you my support of the Dallas Police Department. I want to commend what I understand to be 16 people who would like to see financial aid to the Citizens Review Board. We attended a town hall meeting, which was also attended by Councilman Gates, Kleinman, and Sandy Grayson, which was explained on a board, which I didn't have an opportunity to get any handouts or take pictures of, but the proposal that these 16 people, it's my understanding, are proposing costs the city of Detroit $35 million over a 10-year period. I don't feel that the taxpayers of Dallas need to have any more expenses added to us, which we're already overburdened with, when we have competent council persons, our mayor, our chief of police, our internal affairs already being paid to see to it that our officers are held responsible for their actions. You hire the officer because you believe in them, you trust them, and they want to make our city safer and better. I feel that we have everything already in place to protect our citizens. We need to commend our officers, support our officers. And at that meeting, I asked of the two people that it appeared to me were members of this 16, if any of them had ever ridden with our police officers. Nobody in the room said yes, with the exception of Mr. Cruz and myself. I asked them if they had done anything to volunteer to help with the program that the police volunteer for on prostitution intervention and prevention. Nobody raised their hand. This was a community meeting near our home, and I asked how many people gave funds to the five officers' families who were murdered on 7/7. Many people in that room raised their hands. I am speaking for our police officers to be continued to be observed and overseen by you who have accepted this responsibility and by those who you have hired to take care of this responsibility already. Thank you.
Bill Cruz.
I'd also like to talk about the proposed civilian review board. Whenever you talk about bringing in something new, and you must need it because there's something that's missing. Is there no other agency that's committed to and available for disciplining our police officers and investigating wrongs? I think there are several agencies. For instance, there is the Internal Affairs Department. There's the police chief. There's the district attorney. There's the grand jury. There's the Department of Public Safety. There's the county attorney. There's the state agencies, including the Texas Rangers. Texas Rangers are working on a case here in Dallas now. Are we saying that these agencies are incompetent or somehow corrupt? We're saying the Texas Rangers are incompetent and corrupt? You must be from somewhere else. It couldn't be. There are many agencies that are ready to do it. Well, what about the new agency? What would they be? The one requirement is that they not have any police experience. So this would, in essence, be a pooling of ignorance, which would be trying to oversee the and follow up on investigations done by agencies which have great experience in law enforcement. I don't think that's a good idea. What would be the effect on the police officers? In effect, you're saying that our police are no good liars, that these people are people who should not be in place, that they're somehow not, they're able to fool these other agencies that are investigating the police. I think that there are plenty of agencies that are investigating the police. You shouldn't demean our officers we have now. I think we have a very fine group of officers. They're willing to give their lives to protect ours, and we should appreciate them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jeremy Boss. Not present. B.M. Randolph.
I want people to know who I am. I've been withholding my credentials. But I'm going to tell you that I am Miss Jonah. Raise your hand if you know who the Jonah is, the prophet Jonah. You ever heard of him? Maybe no, but that's your homework. In the Bible, there is a book called Jonah. He's a prophet. I'm a prophetess. I'm also a pastor. I'm also a minister. I'm a Mary Kay beauty consultant. I'll be coming around to talk to y'all. We have products for men and women. I'm getting to my statement, but I also work with, I'm a DISD substitute teacher. I choose Oak Cliff, Pleasant Grove, and South Dallas. And when I appear on those territories, good morning, mother. I say, that's what I mean, because I will bust your butt if you don't do it. Anyway, police officers, I've been here serving, laboring for Dallas because the Holy Ghost sent me here on an assignment. As Jonah, his assignment was to Nineveh, but my assignment was to Dallas. So before I say I never would live because I hated Dallas because y'all killed my favorite president. I said when I came here, I told police officers, I said, y'all killed Kennedy. You killed King. You jolly well might kill Mother Randolph, but I'd be damned they won't be without a fight. And I said, I fight to the death because I represent heaven. If military men can go out and die for America, that's my flag. Sir, will you look at that bag, please, and give me my star flag? But that's okay. I forgot my presentation because I was going to go to church. I said, if they can give that life up for America, I love America. God bless America. That's a prayer. Don't tell me I can't pray. Not only am I going to pray, I'm going to decree and announce prayer around the world, reinstated by executive order. I have covenants. I am an executive from the kingdom of heaven. I can reinstate prayer around the world, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to let the Holy Ghost tell what day he wants me to do it. And when I declare it is a done deal, don't step in and try to redo it because I can decree and declare. What I say, I get. I'm a brigadier. I'm a five-star general for the army of the Lord. And yes, I've been here 14 years, going on 15, just laboring behind the scenes like a termite. But when a termite gets through, that building is coming down. That's lying there with the Bible is going to be reinstated. That's against the word of God is coming down. I don't have to be reelected. I got plenty of dinero from heaven. So anyway, just tell me my time's up because I was on my way to church.
Time is up, Ms. Randolph.
All right. To be continued.
To be continued.
This concludes your open microphone speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Before we break into executive session, we must celebrate a council member for being born on St. Patty's Day. So bring the cake to Mr. Callahan and warm up your pipes, Mr. McGue. Okay. All right. And why don't you lead us into... Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy. All right. We are going to go into executive session now. I asked the council to stay here. This is where the executive session is going to be. It is now 11:09 a.m. on March 20th, 2019. The City Council briefing meeting will go into closed session under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters: 3 Expo Events LLC v. City of Dallas, the State of Texas, City of Dallas v. Dallas Pets Alive, number 190126 in the Supreme Court of Texas. Legal issues related to the Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act and under Section 551074 of Personnel Matters of the Texas Open Meetings Act regarding interview and discuss the qualifications and appointment of a candidate for the position of City Auditor. Thank you. The City Council will go back into open session, and now that we're back into open session, the meeting is adjourned at 4:43 p.m. Thank you.